Welcome back to the Best-Selling Author Podcast, this week's episode sponsored by Nope. Here we talk to best-selling authors about their books and how they became a bestseller. And this week we have an awesome fortune of having best-selling romance author Tori Heat. Welcome, Tori.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. We've been connected on Instagram for a while. I always love connecting with other authors, and you just happen to be an amazing best-selling romance author. And it's a little spicy, some of the stuff you write, but I'll tell you,
it's a little spicy.
But I'll tell you this, the same thing I tell everybody coming on and joining us is thank you so much. Our goal here is to kind of shine a light on the creative process for our authors and, help, inspire other people to kind of, go write their stories. So welcome.
Thank you.
So first, if we can, I don't know if I ever asked you this, Tori, but if you could, what was there a moment when you were reading books where you're like, I knew I had to write books? When was the moment you kind of knew you wanted to be an author, or is it a string of moments?
Yeah, I think it was kind of like a string of moments. I've always written. It was never something that I was like, yeah, I'm going to become an author one day. Like, I've always just kind of written. Mm-hmm. And I painted more than I wrote. Mm-hmm. And when my daughter came home, she was adopted and she was in foster care for the first 6 weeks. So by the time she came home with us, she would only sleep in my arms. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't paint anymore. So I needed some other kind of creative outlet to kind of, release all these like stories and emotions and feelings that were in me. And so I started writing a book on my phone.
Cool. So you're just with one hand?
One hand. Book on Google Docs on my phone.
I wish I could say I didn't understand my first boy, Luca. I found out that my wife's wife, Katie, our second is going to be a boy. Luca did the same thing. He wanted to co-sleep with us all the time. He wanted to sleep on top of us, and it was tough. But yeah. Look at you though. It's like, that's a perfect example of like no excuses, right? Like, we're usually happier when we're, have some sort of creative outlet, even when you're, being weighed down by a baby.
I needed something to remember like who I was.
Because you're a creative person. Like, it's really creative, lots of the things you've come up with. So that kind of makes me wonder though, like how long did they co-sleep, and like how long did you kind of stick with it, writing on the phone?
Forever. She was a bad sleeper. We did that up until she was like 18 months old. Mm-hmm. And then she started sleeping through the night at 18 months old, like just randomly one night, she just slept through the night. But when she started sleeping through the night, she stopped napping.
So immediately. Oh no.
Yes. So it was like overnight switch, like slept through the night, no nap. So she
was not typical.
18 months old.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh. And you still managed to write all these books. It's nothing short of a feat.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Thank you.
And because something we talk about, I've talked about with a lot of authors, it's like first you got to be a writer first, and then the author journey is like completely different, right? It's the marketing, the editing, like all that other stuff, right? But it starts with being a writer. So I guess now you kind of write whenever you can. Or please correct me if I'm wrong, but do you like have a set time a day where you just love to write, or you just like write when you can, or how does that look like for you, Tori?
I usually write whenever I can. I really struggle. I have a second child now. You can probably hear him crying in the background. Mm-mm. He's also not a great sleeper. So I'm usually burnt out by the time they both go to bed around 8 p.m., but I really try and write after they go to bed. And so usually the best time I can write is during his nap. That's usually when I get the most writing done. If I'm getting close to the end of a book, I'll try and find help with the kids and I'll be like, look, I just need to go shut myself away upstairs. Mm-hmm. And I'll do that for like 2 days in a row. And I'll just like, you know, pound out the end of the book. Cause when you get to that point in the book, like where you can see the ending and you know what's going to happen, you just got to get it out. It's it eats away at you. You just got to get it down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, there's this buildup in you. You're just like, yeah, it's right there. I'm at the finish line. I always write. Yeah. Yeah. So you write a lot faster near the end too.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Like towards the end, like a 10K day is not out of the ordinary.
Really?
Yeah, it's not out of the ordinary towards the end.
Oh my gosh. Well, better than me. Like I'm proud of myself when I have like a 2,000 word day, or like sometimes I'm just like, yep, 500 is where I'm stopping today. And I know that's terrible because I know there's so many authors who are like, Stephen King says he writes 6 pages a day, or some people are like, yeah, I can't stop until I like hit 2,000 a day. And
I think
for me, I always said anybody can write a book. Let's just say they can write a 75,000 page book if they write, you know, 250 words a day for, you know, 6-7 months, right? Or something like that. I forgot what the figures were. So it's really just, I guess, no excuses, but that's incredible. I guess I need to, you know, get on your level when it comes to the hitting the writing goals. Do you have like a set word writing goal each day, or?
If I'm in the middle of writing a book, I try and write 2,500 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's more than that. Sometimes it's less than that. It really, really depends on where I'm at and where the characters are at and where the plot's at. But the downside to being, you know, a quicker writer is that I procrastinate because I know that I can write, you know, that many words in a day. So some days I'll just be like, oh, it's fine. I'll just pick up the slack tomorrow. But like, we both know I'm not picking up the slack tomorrow. Like I'm not picking up. But it's hard because like, I'm full-time at home. Like I'm trying to do a full-time thing at home, and then writing itself is another full-time job, and then marketing is another full-time job on top of that. And, you know, so then you start juggling all these full-time things and there's not enough hours in the day. So you just
have an amazing friend like Hades, and just, she does your marketing too, right? She helps you with that, or?
Yeah. So she does my Instagram. I usually mess it up on her. I messed it up with my post. She has like a whole aesthetic going that she likes to post. And then I'll text her. Like I texted her yesterday. I said, I'm going to post this picture and it's going to ruin your aesthetic, but I promise you're going to like it. And she does my formatting for me too. So
yeah. In the actual book itself.
Yeah. Yeah. She does my formatting. She does my paperback formatting because she is like a genius at it. And I just go, this is the vibe. Have at it.
Yeah, I swear. So many authors out there, they think that, you know, you get published, then it's just going to sell, right? It's like, no, it doesn't stop there. That was like a rude awakening for me when you and I were talking about it last year. You know, when I started, you know, doing this podcast, and it was tough for me because like for a while I've been an introvert and, you know, getting out there, but there's like, there's no time for excuses. You know, if I want to sell books, you got to get yourself out there. So was there kind of a switch that you flipped? Cause I remember you were doing like kind of the mask, like kind of keeping yourself. And then I see this really new you in the last few posts. It's like, here I am, you know, and I feel like you're tackling life with more of your whole authentic self now. And I'm just wondering, like, what, I don't know, like, can you kind of take us through that journey a little bit, Tori?
So when I first started like releasing the books and publishing them and stuff, obviously they're like a spicy romance.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very spicy romance.
Indeed.
And I was still fostering at the time. And so like we didn't really want the foster care society to find out that I was writing spicy romance. So I did the pen name, I kept my identity hidden. And then you kind of like along the way, it just got to the point where I was like, The mask is exhausting. Like to wear a mask in every single one of my posts is exhausting. To figure out how to hide my face in every single one of my posts is exhausting. And I love the mask, but yeah. I want to do it on my terms, like when it feels right. I don't want to feel like I have to do the mask. Mm-hmm. And then just lately, the last month or so, I would probably say, it's kind of been like this whole mindset shift for me where I'm really trying to just kind of embrace who I am. Mm-hmm. And I'm not everyone's cup of tea. Mm-hmm. I'm really not. And I know that. And, you know, even when you get to be in your 30s and you get to be an adult, like people aren't nice about it. And, you know, it's like being back in high school sometimes on social media where you kind of just have to be like, you know what? People are going to talk, might as well give them something to talk about. And right. I'm going to be myself. So it's kind of embracing that side of things. And like you and I, we talk a lot about like manifestation and stuff like that. And I realized that I wasn't going to achieve the dreams and the goals I wanted if I continued to only be a part of who I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You bring your whole self for sure.
Yeah. And so I kind of found that like with Labyrinth, which is the book that's going to release in a couple weeks here. It's my darkest book, but I was also the most like authentic in it. Like writing it, it felt very raw and very real. And I was like, I'm about to put my diary out there. So, you know, you're going to have to get a thicker skin.
That's it. That's exactly why I needed to start putting myself out there, you know, do this and like, you know, more or less, like, I don't know how familiar you are with Napoleon Hill, but in the early 1900s, he interviewed all these millionaires, right? Found the congruencies, you know, what made them successful. And I'm just like, I want to reverse engineer that with best-selling authors. Like, I want to understand what makes everybody tick. And and for me, it was just like the same thing. Well, not exactly the same thing. Your journey is your journey. That's really cool, though. Tell me this though. So I think, yeah, we were talking about it earlier. Was there, I don't know. Well, I guess what really got you into, you know, writing the spicy stuff? Like, was it just, you're not, because for me, I wanted to write something, which is a combination of lots of things that I've seen. And I wanted to write a story that I've always wanted to see myself. Is that kind of the way you felt, or you just wanted to, you know, really go there and put, you know, these characters and, you know, different locations? Can you kind of, you know, take us through, you know, your creative, your thought process?
So when I first started writing, I did not think that I would write like spicy romance or smut or any of that. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who, when she realized I was writing stuff on my phone, she was like, can you write me a werewolf romance book? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I can do that. Yeah, sure, I can do that, you know. And now, like, that wasn't something I was comfortable with back then. Like, I'm a very awkward person in general. So, like, writing sex that feels natural is not something that came naturally to me. So, every time I would write a sex scene, I had a glass of wine because I needed to just kind of like shut off my brain.
Yeah.
And then I realized that I was pretty good at it. And so it kind of just like fell into it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm pretty good at this. I don't mind it. I'm going to keep going. I no longer have to drink wine to write my sex scenes. So I mean, that's a plus. Mm-hmm. But then as I started to write my own stories, I'm kind of writing the romance that I want to see. Mm-hmm. So I call it a Black Mirror romance. So it's like romance books where it's a situation where you go, what if you stuck people like this? Mm-hmm. You know, what if you stuck a bunch of people into this situation? Would they still fall in love?
Right. You know,
who would fall in love? How would this work? And so what you'll find is that a lot of my books, they don't have, it's not a lot of like, you won't find like the miscommunication trope. You won't find the third act breakup. Those are all things that are very common in like contemporary romance. A lot of my conflict is either internal in terms of the person, like them working through, you know, figuring out who they are, what they want to be, what's missing out of their life, what they're kind of hiding from themselves. Or it's an external conflict that they have to work through together to kind of make it through. And I found that that was missing in a lot of the romance books that I was reading, because I was reading a lot of contemporary romance where it's, you know, she sees a text message from, you know, a girl and she thinks that he's dating someone else, but really it's just his cousin's in town for the week. And, you know, I love that kind of romance. And, you know, I have appreciation for the people who can write that kind of romance. I was just craving something different. And so I thought that maybe if I was craving something different, maybe other people were too.
It's interesting you put that to it, because it kind of reminds me, and I apologize to make it about me.
No.
There was, I kind of felt the exact same way about the two love interest in my, obviously Dante and his love interest, Honora. I always felt like there was so much stuff like that makes the relationship so dramatic, like all these fighting and stuff. I'm like, let's just put them in a world where there's so many external issues, like you said, or internal struggles. Like they already got enough to deal with, right? And I think it, what was it in Sunk? Was there a ghost? Am I remembering incorrectly?
Jinx was in a haunted house.
Okay.
Sunk was on a submarine.
Okay. So what? Where was the ghost? I guess there was the ghost as well as part of the, you know, the triumvirate. You know, the people and that's I forgot which book. I apologize.
In Jinx, so Jinx was very like they're stuck in the house.
Yeah.
They are trying to escape the house, but that's it's a very minor plot point in compared to each of them kind of, each of them have their own vices that kind of gets taken away from them in the house. So they work through that.
And to support the podcast, please go to cjpizzurro.com. That's PIZZURRO.com and buy some of my merch. Or you can go to Amazon and search CJ Pizzurro, or just search Dante and the Dark Seed out now. Thanks. When you said that, it makes me wonder, are you a architect or a gardener? Or like combination, like, do you like to plot out stuff? Or are you like a pantser? Sorry.
I try so hard to be a plotter. I try so hard. and I like try and make this nice plot and all this stuff. And I try and make it so nice. And then my characters go, no, we're not doing that. They come to me with their stories and they come to me with, you know, their souls and their emotions and what they're trying to work through. And I can do my best to kind of direct them, but like their story's already fully formed by the time I start writing, and it's not me.
Is it based on who they are as people? Or is it because it's kind of like preordained? Because obviously, you know, arcing is a thing, you know? Because for me, I feel the exact same way. Like, based on who this archetype of a person is, like this trope, I have to remain true to them as a character, right? Is that kind of the same, you know, thought process with you, I guess, when you say it's kind of, it's already, they've already figured itself out, right?
I don't think so.
Interesting.
So, like, I can explain it a bit better with the book I'm working on right now. So the book I'm working on right now, I'm avoiding it. I'm avoiding it because it deals with a lot of very deep parts and a lot of darkish topics and screaming at me in my mind because she wants her story to be told. And she's telling me all these things that happened to her. And I have to write this story and she's telling me what's happening to her, but she doesn't fit into an archetype because she was a character in Labyrinth and now she's getting like her full length book. And in The Labyrinth, I thought she was one way. So I thought I was going to sit down to write this story and she was going to be a specific kind of character and she was going to be one way. And I started writing chapter one and she starts telling me that it's all an act. It's all an act she's putting on. You know, she is, she has all these feelings and all this anger underneath the surface and everything that I thought she was all just an act. And I'm like, I thought I knew who you were. I thought I knew who you were, but she's very mad at me right now because she wants me to write her story faster and I'm putting it off because I'm scared.
You info dump, like, do you have like a master document to kind of get stuff of this onto the paper first?
Kind of.
Yeah. Because for me, it's just like, it's such a beautiful, chaotic, almost, I would say, feminine process is like that pure creative energy. And it's hard to make it linear. It's hard.
Sometimes I see scenes. So sometimes like my master document, it'll be like a scene that I'm seeing in my mind. Or sometimes it'll be a line that I'm hearing the character saying. So like the one line that's really repeating in my head right now is the man in the book, he calls her Sunshine. But he calls her Sunshine in a very sarcastic tone of voice, like, thanks a lot, Sunshine. Thanks, Sunshine. And then slowly that evolves to like, no, she's actually like the light of his life. And it becomes like a very romantic thing. But I can hear him saying it in my head, like, thanks, Sunshine.
That's genius.
So I'm weird.
No, it's the same thing with me. Sometimes like I would, it was the weirdest thing. Like sometimes I'll just be doing something completely random and I'll just like, bam, like a new idea into your head. I'm like, I gotta write this down at the very least, you know, write out this scene. And I'll be honest, sometimes it's like immediately my Dwayne character. I'm like, he's a psychopath. Like what screwed up crap can I make him do? Like, what is something that Hannibal Lecter did in Silence of the Lambs? But like, let's do this. Let's 3X
it. Make it worse.
Let's make it way worse. Like, just to tease people, like, there's this one scene where Hannibal escapes prison. I'm just like, I have to do it so much better. Like, I have to do a darker version of that. Like, you know what I'm talking about? That scene from Silence of the Lambs? Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, honestly, Hannibal is one of my favorite characters of all time. Because he's such a genius, but like you also feel for him because he had a screwed up childhood. Obviously, there's no good excuse for eating people and you know serial killing the way he does. But it's just like
disclaimer that right now.
Right? Yeah. Let's just disclaimer. Chris does not condone the killing of people. But yeah, I just, there was just something about it. Like, it wasn't until I think Hannibal Rising, you found out, like, he was forced to eat his family or whatever. He was forced to eat his sister. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Makes sense.
It all adds up now.
Yeah. And it's just like, for me, I guess, I apologize, you know, this is about you, your time. But the reason why I really wanted to do that is like, kind of, like you wanted to see more of the romance you wanted to see. I wanted to shine a light on the fact that lots of this trauma can start at a young age for people and it builds into what Dwayne eventually becomes, right? He wasn't loved. He wasn't shown love or compassion. And then it's just like, all right, none of y'all get to live on Earth. Like all y'all, like none of y'all deserve. And it's just like this, it's really unbalanced and unhinged, but like his, you know, Dante is like his exact opposite. He wants to protect the world. He wants, you know, he's an empath and help every human on this planet. So it's a beautiful journey though. So tell me this though, Corey, if you can. You had the word goal about 2,500 each day. Do you have any kind of, I know Burt by Hades does lots of your marketing. Do you kind of random thoughts about, you know, some of your posts as well? Like, hey, this is for my own selfish. I want to know this selfishly. when you're writing your posts, because they're very well written, I love them, you know, very introspective. Do they come to you? Do you kind of plan them out? Like, you know, how do you kind of plan, you know, the social media?
Like my posts that are more about me rather than mm-hmm. my books, that kind yeah. of stuff. Yeah. Like, so the post I just did about, I think I did it 2 days ago about not being apologetic anymore. Mm-hmm. It was something that had been weighing on me for a couple of days and I was like, okay, it's time to take the picture and post it. And sometimes it's very personal. So sometimes I literally just have to like take the picture and just post it without thinking about it because yeah. I'll talk myself into it.
I've done the same thing. Cause it's tough. Like it was tough to kind of start putting yourself out there, you know, whether, you know, the foster thing or not, I'm sure it was yeah. kind of tough even then. Right. It's a kind of,
like, you know, picture I just posted, like I posted a picture of, like my stomach, like, with,
yeah,
I don't want to put my stomach on the internet, but I did.
Right. And you don't come off as awkward to me, Tori. I gotta admit, I think all the time writing and stuff, I think writing is such a beautiful introspective journey, right? It's like you get to almost have a better relationship with yourself writing. Did you ever, at least that's the way I feel. Do you ever kind of feel the same way?
Yeah, I definitely do. And my editor is a good friend of mine. So sometimes she'll call me out too, like when she's reading my books and editing it, she'll be like, hey, this is a reflection of XYZ in your life. And I'm like, can you stop? I don't want to know. I don't want to know what this is a reflection of in my life.
That's funny. And for the listeners out there, I tried to get her to be, you know, help me as well. Yes. But she couldn't do the super dark stuff. So just, I know she kind of gets on you when you get a little dark, but you said this next book coming up is getting down there, huh? So,
I had to give her like so many warnings. I had to be like, this book is dark. This book is dark. This book is a toxic romance. Please don't go into this thinking this is not a toxic romance because this is toxic. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think she did okay.
Good.
I still feel bad.
But I did the math. 2,500 words a day comes out to about 912,000 words each year, which is a lot. There's like, so I don't know how long each of your books are. Mine aren't very long. They're under 100,000. At that pace, you're writing, what was it, like maybe three? How many books are you writing each year on average, do you think?
I did three books last year. Mm. And I've done three this year.
Ooh, picking up steam. Look at you.
Yeah, I don't know how. Actually, I did three and two novellas this year, actually.
Yeah. Look at you.
I just don't talk about the novellas.
Yeah. Well, the money, we've talked about this a lot, and this is what a lot of authors say. I know the author that I was studying, name eludes me, the guy who wrote the Left Behind series, he writes like nine books a year. He says the money's in the catalog. It's having about all that back catalog of all those books. And what you're pretty much telling me is I got to pick up the pace so I can get more books in my catalog, like, right?
Honestly, comparison is such like, and that's what I found too being on social media, because I wasn't on social media before this job. And now you have to be on social media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I'm on Instagram and I'm on Facebook and I'm on TikTok, and comparison will eat you alive. It will eat you alive. And I see people who are pumping out books like every month. I see people who are pumping out books every 2 months. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
And, you know, but then like you talk to me and you're like, what am I doing wrong? And I'm over here like, no, like I need to learn. I need to learn. Right?
I don't know if it's like my brain or something, because I take lion's mane. I was telling you about the CBG. This is the stuff I use. Like it's not a cheap bottle. Some things help me here and there. I know lots of us are like addicted to dopamine. So like even being on social media, sometimes it'll like screw up our dopamine receptors and like make it harder for us to focus. So I don't know if anybody out there, you know, listening is, you know, kind of struggling with that. Something that I've kind of helped me focus more is no phones first thing in the morning, cold showers. It sounds miserable because it is. So I don't know if there's any like ritual that you kind of have that kind of helps you lock in, or do you have like a routine? Or you just hunker down when it's time to get, you know, busy with writing?
I actually don't know if we've had this conversation or not, but I was diagnosed with ADHD 2 months ago.
Oh, wow. No, you have not.
At the ripe age of 30, diagnosed with ADHD. And actually, like, once I got the diagnosis, like, everything in my life made so much more sense.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. But apparently it's really common for people, or like women who have young kids, like they're unable to mask once they have those young kids, because you're like, your mind and, you know, you're just, your focus is everywhere. Your focus is everywhere, and you lose that ability to mask. And yeah, so it made complete sense. So I was really struggling in the spring. Post-sunk, I was really struggling. I couldn't focus. I couldn't do it. Like, I would sit down and I would just stare at a blank computer for hours. And like, I don't have the time to just be sitting here wasting, you know, just like looking at a blank computer. Like, I need to be with my kids. I need to be doing something for the house. I need to be working. Like, I don't have time to just sit and look at a computer screen.
Right.
So yeah, I spoke with my doctor and like, they got me on medication for it, which hopefully I will not have to be on forever, but it does, like, it helps for right now, but it doesn't fix it. Like, it doesn't fix it completely. It just, like, it gives you that boost you need to, like, stop the executive dysfunction cycle, which is what I was trapped in. I was trapped in, like, and, you know, and so many people are like, oh, you know, you're just lazy. You need to do this. You need to do that. And you just physically can't.
Yeah.
You just physically can't. So it breaks that cycle enough that I can get up and do things. But I find that writing things down helps me, like having like a list that I can see, and not a list on my computer. Like, it needs to be a written list. So I keep an agenda and it has like my tasks in it for every day. So, you know, chapter one of the book I'm writing, you know, or 2,500 words of the book I'm writing, you know, posting on TikTok, posting on Instagram, whatever. And that way I can physically cross it off. And the other thing that I've recently started doing is I've started manifestation journaling. So I do that in the morning and at night. And it kind of brings me more centered, I would say. Like, it makes me more focused on not just like tangible goals, but like the less tangible goals, like more vague stuff in your head. But it also kind of puts it down into words, like, okay, if I want to achieve X, then I need to do these things leading up to it. It's not just like, oh, I want to, you know, manifest lots of money and it's going to drop from the sky. It's, I want to manifest a successful career. So in order for me to get that successful career today, these are the steps I'm going to take. I'm going to post on my social media. I'm going to start the book. I'm going to write 2,500 words. I'm going to speak positively to myself. I am going to believe that I can do this. And it's taking physical steps towards something that isn't so physical.
Well, that's the first step, right, with manifesting. It's like, I heard this preacher at a black church, but it's best I've ever heard. It's like, we can do all the praying all day. We can do all the praying, you know, we can match that frequency energetically, but we're not matching it technically until we're actually putting in the work, right? Creating space for that thing that we want to fill up that space, right? And you're doing that, you know, by writing and the marketing, and you're doing the thing, Tori. You're doing the thing. Yeah, you're doing it. You're not trying. You're doing it. It's great. And I hope this kind of shines a light on, for so many people, that helps people realize, not anybody can do it. But I think Yeah, I think anybody can do it. I think anybody can do anything, you know, once we put our mind to it and find a, you know, creative outlet. And it might not be as good as you, but
I think the key is having both the passion and the business.
Yeah.
Like you got to come into it with a passion, and you got to come into it loving what you're writing. And, but then you have to take that on its head and be like, all right, now we're going to sell it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the cool thing about my book. It's like, I've had so many people, everybody who's read it has loved it. I just need to share it with more people, because my go-to-market strategy was just duty. I recorded another day with a gentleman by the name of Brian Cohen, whose company helps, you know, authors figure out, you know, what genres they need to be in. Right. I had no idea. I thought I was, you know, my first book was young adult. Wrong. Like, just because, like, because my next book, they grew up. Right. And we talked about it. It's just a marketing nightmare to switch genres mid-series. You can't do it.
No.
So, for those listening out there, figure out what you're doing, right? Like, study the market. Like, well, he even told me, he's like, you know, Chris, the easiest way to go get new readers is go where they hang out. And I'm like, huh. And I'm like, I searched through the Facebook groups. There's dark fantasy, there's horror books. Like, I'm like, holy crap. And maybe I just didn't want to admit that my book was dark fantasy or horror. At first, I think that might have been what it is. I'm like, no, man, it's the story of good and evil, man. It's like, it's juxtaposed and no. Dante's so light. And I'm like, nah, bro, it's dark. Like, there's a line in book two where Dwayne is killing somebody. He's like, if a man gets murdered in a forest, does anyone hear him scream? Right. You know, the whole, like, does a tree fall in the forest?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, let me make that dark, you know? And so I don't know. Can you kind of tell me, so when you said earlier, when you said you see the scenes, you kind of hear the dialogue as well too sometimes. You're like, oh, this would be cool. Because, like, for me, it always started, like, I watched a lot of TV and movies. I'm just like, I always think through that lens. I'm like, what would be cool, you know? Is that your train of thought?
Kind of. Like, sometimes, like with Labyrinth, there was a whole scene that I could see in my head where, before I wrote it, and he took her to an abandoned church, and I could see this abandoned church in my head. Like, I could see, like, the vines growing down the walls and, like, the broken stained glass windows. And then I didn't know the entirety of the scene, but I did know at one point he was going to tell her to get on her knees and take her communion.
Mm-hmm. Take your sacrament, woman.
So I did know that line was going to be in there at some point.
That's good. That is extraordinarily creative. And I was raised Catholic, so that is chef's kiss. That's awesome. So, tell me, Tori, so you have a next book planned. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
So it is the next book in the 10th Circle series. So the first book is The Labyrinth, and that's Ten and Marissa's story that comes out on the 22nd.
Of this month? And
yes.
Of this woohoo. Month.
I know. It's so close. I'm terrified. Terrified.
You got this. You so got this.
And so the book I'm working on right now is the next book in the series, which is there is a friend in Ten's book, and so it's his book, and his name is Griffin. So it's Griffin's book.
Cool.
Yeah, it's different, but it's kind of cool to be in the same world. Like, I'm still in the world of the Labyrinth, and it's dark and twisted and, you know, post-apocalyptic, which is nice. But he's a completely different character. So it's switching it up, but staying in a world I love, which is awesome.
I love it. Yeah, there's nothing more than, like, shared misery or pain that brings people together, which I'm sure you kind of have some of that in that kind of that darker world. And it's always has this weird fusing effect. But yeah, tell us all this. You know, it's been a great conversation. It's been lovely having you on. Can you tell us all where we can find more about you and where we can buy your books?
So my books are on Kindle Unlimited, and you can also get them on Amazon. So you can find them there. You can follow me on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook, all three. And I'm Tori Heat on all of them, with Tori with two R's.
Woohoo. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Tori. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.